Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And although it's Christmas week, it's still Monday, and that means it's still Edwin. Hi Edwin, how you doing?
Well, I'm trying to stay focused and stay relentless. You know, that's the motto for next year, relentless in 2022, high spirits, and maintain that an attitude of positivity and just staying trying to stay relentless, because it's, as you and I know, and as you and I have been speaking about it for a while now, we said 2021, back in 2020, we said that 2021 was going to be very, very confronting. It was going to be very tiresome year. People are going to have to put their heads down, tail up in order to get things done, because 2022, if you recall, we said in 2020 that 2022 was really when the shit show was going to start, and I haven't changed my mind, and this is when things are really going to start, as they say, cooking with natural gas, if we do get gas.
Well, that's right. The price of gas probably is going to go up if that's the case. And, you got to say that the old Omicron is still bouncing around the place. And, wherever you look, there's still stuff going on, isn't there?
Mate, the thing is, I've been talking to a lot of friends, clients and relatives and that, and just, in general, I've been saying, look, the issues that we've had with the bug over the last 2 years has been absolutely phenomenal. But what's around the corner, I feel is even going to be, it's going to be worse, because whether you're jabbed, unjabbed, whether you've been double jabbed, hooked, and they've given you an uppercut, whatever your preferences are, whatever you've had done, the problem that we're facing in 2022 is not only with regards to construction and the supply chain issues, but also with food. And this is what's front of mind with us, with our buyers, as to helping them to determine what they buy, why they've moved a little bit further afield. We've seen this the dynamics change, where people have been looking for bigger homes, or homes with a bigger plot of land. So in case there were further lockdowns and further restrictions of movement, but also that they can sort of start preparing for possibly the supply chain issues around food and the necessities of life. But it is going to be a mayhem in 2022, and now we've got the issue with urea and AdBlue and all these sort of things, and the WeChat chatterers are going to put us into clearer perspective as to what China are saying, particularly in relation to Australia and the supply of urea to Australia, and how they see us coping, or perhaps not coping, with that issue moving forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we've said on a few occasions, grow your own veggies. It's a good idea, particularly now. And if you've got some land, put some veggie borders down, as you've done, and grow your own carrots.
Well, that's it, Martin. Just make sure that you plant the carrot seed that you've coached me on that, on how to plant the carrot seeds properly. That whole side of things is going, it's moving along okay. But again, it's all in light of preparing, movement, restrictions of access to supply, to shops, to what you can do. Look, it's just, call me a prepper, call me whatever you want to call me, but it's just something that, we've foreseen for a while now, and it doesn't hurt. Doesn't hurt to also eat a little bit more closer to natural than all the products that come in from overseas that have laced with all sorts of chemicals and pesticides and fertilizers and whatnot. So it's a lifestyle change, and that many are doing, going north from and more so from Melbourne than from New South Wales. But look, it's lifestyle changes. Things have just been radically changed in the last 2 years, particularly in 2021. So we're going to see what's going to happen in 2022.
Yeah, and the environmental impact of growing your own stuff compared with, buying stuff that's coming from overseas, as you say, with whatever on it, and, just the extra costs of that must make a lot of economic sense as well as health sense. So it is a good thing. And it's worth saying, when just, you know, on a topic that is sort of related, you now know, and I think most of the audience know, why it is that, for example, John Adams and I stopped making shows. And basically, I didn't want to disclose specifically my issues here in the family until Jill was ready to share with the wider audience the battle that she's currently undergoing with regard to mesothelioma, which, you know, was covered on The Drum last week, and, you know, I think a very significant and important contribution. John has got his own issues with some other stuff, so we just didn't have the time to do what we were wanted to do with our joint shows. But nevertheless, I'm still ploughing through with DFA, because I think it's really important that some of the issues that, you know, we talk about continue to be talked about. But I just want to make the point that Jill's message was absolutely about the risks from asbestos. If you're doing DIY, you should absolutely assume there is asbestos rather than assuming there isn't until you trip over it, right? Because by then it's too late.
Oh, look, first and foremost, Martin, what an incredible woman that you've had and you've got by your side and will continue to have by your side in your heart. In moving forward, a pleasure to have met her and to know more about her story. I mean, a woman that's just using her life story as to leave behind a legacy. Being able to see her strength and how she's confronting death and not only that, but in a way embracing it and leaving a legacy for others to follow. And as she says in her she said in her interview, she could only save one life moving forward, it's been worthwhile. I haven't met many people, Martin, over the years that I've been on this planet that have had the same strength, fortitude, and that has been as relentless as she has, particularly in the last 2 years that I've known yourself and her, and a little bit more knowing you. But it's just our heart, our prayers, reach out to you, your family, everybody there. But with this in mind, and bringing it to light, and you mentioned also John Adams. I recall we did touch on this a couple of years ago. Yep. With relation to the issues, and remember the shows, the renovation rescues, and all these shows that were being promoted left, right, and center, and the shows you talked about the psychology behind the auctions at that time, and all these things, all this frenzy around property and what people do, it's just incredible how even on these shows. I did a post on LinkedIn many years ago, bringing that to light as well, how in these shows, we saw contestants actually, demolishing wet areas, meaning the bathrooms, the laundries, the kitchen space areas in homes that were from the nature of the architecture and the brick that they used. I'd say they were built in the late 60s, early 70s. And they were absolutely demolishing them with everyday gear, and at best they only had dust masks that they got from God given or probably bought at Bunnings at the time. Just incredible how the government has really had no control, has lost control, and doesn't really want to control what goes on, because obviously it's going to affect the bottom line, line in regards to duties and taxes that they can charge people moving forward. And the biggest price that people pay, unfortunately, like Jill, is with their lives.
Well, that's right. And just in case people don't know, 4,000 people a year at the moment on average are being diagnosed with asbestos-related disease. 4,000, right? And if you put that in the context of traffic accidents or COVID, that's a lot bigger number, right? And it's every year. So 150,000 people in the last 30 to 40 years. The second point there to make is that the exposure to asbestos doesn't have to be continuous. It doesn't have to be over a long period of time. One exposure on one occasion with just a few fibres, if you're prone to it, can create the problem, but you don't know immediately. It takes many years for the asbestos disease to work its way through, and by the time it does, it's almost impossible to treat. The survival rate is 6.5% over 5 years once you've been diagnosed with mesothelioma. It's the worst of all cancers, right? And then a couple of other statistics. About one-third of all properties in Australia, and that includes residential properties, houses and apartments, commercial buildings, public buildings, schools, wherever you look, about one-third of all buildings have asbestos in them currently. Which means that you've got, a 1 in 3 chance of doing something and basically stirring up asbestos dust. It's also rots. So even if it's in situ, the old argument used to be, well, just don't touch it and it'll be fine. But no, it's not true because it rots. So even in situ, on the roofs, wherever it is, and it's on roofs, it's in pipes, it's in electric wiring, it's in floors, it's wherever you may think. And then the final point, which is the one that really, really shocks me, is whilst it has in theory been banned in Australia, imports today from places around the world can include up to 5% asbestos, and it comes in without checks, without any thought at all for the consequences. So we're still building new properties with asbestos in them. And as a result of that, you know, if the first phase of asbestos was people mining asbestos in a small number of places in Australia, the second phase was in the construction sector. The third wave, the third phase, is the DIY phase. And that is the one that we want to call out, right? And the scary thing is that the numbers are increasing and more women in this third wave are being diagnosed than ever before. So as I said, and I'll say again, if you're thinking of doing any DIY whatsoever, start from the assumption that there is asbestos there and get it checked rather than hoping it's not there and just carrying on, because it can kill you.
Well, that's right. And as you mentioned, Martin, it's the deterioration of the asbestos materials or materials that contain asbestos, that's also of huge concern. A lot of people don't know, and they perhaps don't understand that, you know, with a lot of these properties and homes in the inner west that are fetching, you know, these terraces that are fetching your $3.5-4 million for shoeboxes in the inner west, a lot of them not only are riddled with asbestos, but with arsenic, lead paint. And in a lot of cases, you'd find that in the, you know, closer to the central hubs, a lot of DIYers in the 80s and the 90s buried a lot of the old asbestos in the backyard. So you also got to be careful as to what you go digging in your backyard. So if you are going to be growing veggies in your backyard, go with the raised planter veggie beds as opposed to digging straight into the, because you just don't know what's there. The contamination levels in some suburbs are phenomenal. People don't understand, Martin, that the underlay of the old carpets, that like horsehair type of underlay, has asbestos. Yeah, the floorboards used to be laced with arsenic in order to keep the termites and to keep the bugs away from properties. And it goes on and on. Then you've got with all the properties, the older properties that have got the old galvanized pipes that are rusting, and people are just drinking water out of them, you know, willy-nilly and without any treatment. So yeah, look, it is alarming, but you know what the other question is what have the states, local states and federal government done to curb this, other than to close the major plants? You know, little to bugger all, because as you said, there are materials that are still coming in that are not being checked. There are, you know, it's not policed. These new buildings, As they started going up from 2014, 2015, it was an absolute shit show, because a lot of the materials that have been coming in since 2015 have come in from China, and the tolerance there is up to 10%, and we've allowed that. And so the gyprock that you've got in a lot of these buildings are laced with it. Then you've got these new materials. We use caesar stone, but now you've got quantum quartz, and that quartz material, that's also man-made material, when it gets grounded down and it gets for people that don't know what quantum quartz is, it's usually placed on your bench tops and your vanities bench stops and your preparation areas in the kitchen. So it looks like a stone, but it's not. It's a man-made material. So when that gets handled on site, cut, polished, scrubbed, sanded, all these fibers are just floating everywhere. You don't have to be working with it to be affected. The other thing is, a lot of people that got affected, that have been affected over the years, it's not necessarily the people that were been working with it, but it's the families when they go home and they wash the overalls and they wash the materials or get in the car or the utes or the vans that all these materials are being transported. I mean, it just goes on and on. And it's just, I'm so, again, I just say with all, with a humble heart, humble attitude, just say it was a pleasure to be able to meet Jill and to know yourself and just this legacy that's been left behind. And I hope that I want to pledge my support to you and the foundation that it's been created in order to get this message out. And we need to certainly get this message out and make it go viral.
Absolutely. Well, she's founded this charity, Asbestos Awareness Australia. There's a website. We're going to put a lot more content up. We've actually been interviewing other people who've been exposed to asbestos, and some of that content will come up too. Interestingly, after the program shown on the drum, we actually had the Australian Financial Review do an article over the weekend, which was well received. And we also had the Daily Mail Online do an article, a very long and detailed article about Jill, but also about asbestos. Really worth watching for and looking out for. I'll put the link in the comments below. Believe it or not, that's been viewed more than 400,000 times since it was posted just over 48 hours ago. 400,000 times. That's amazing, right? So it shows that there is actually an appetite here for people wanting to know more. And in a way, if we've been able to raise people's awareness and just get in people's minds the thought that, well, could it be asbestos, you know? And just to be clear, it's hard sometimes to identify whether it is or whether it isn't. Only professionals can do that, and sometimes even professionals don't always do a very good job of it, which is another problem. And also make the point that if you are renting a property, you should actually ask the agent about asbestos, right? They are obliged to actually have a register of asbestos, so it should be something which should be disclosed.
Well, that's right. But see, this is going back again to the issues of due diligence and not doing the due diligence and what gets thrown under the carpet or in the too hard basket. And that is, as much as you tenants and as much as new owners should be informed, they're not. And because it's easier to throw everything under the carpet, a lot of people don't understand that there's a lot of cellulose fiber. Now, some people think that the issues that were spoken about 8-9 years ago, or maybe a little bit more, with regards to the insulation that predominantly was noted in Canberra, which contained asbestos fibres. What's known as cellulose fibre, or fluffy stuff that they used to inject into the roofs. There's still a lot of homes in the North Shore and in the eastern suburbs that are not registered with the councils with regards to these being affected by it. So whenever we inspect properties, whenever we go out there or we get our building and pest inspectors to look at, we specifically make note of the insulation side of things, because a lot of people don't understand how as it breaks down, as it crumbles, it comes through the through the ventilation holes. Yep. It comes through the cornices. You've got vermin or insects crawl around in there, and they bring it into the home, and it's just it's just horrendous. It's but look, again, I think if if nothing else that people can take out of today's show, it's just something that you need to get behind this program. You need to get behind something that Jill has put in so much of her, you know, last month's, the last year or so in putting all this information together, documenting it, and just becoming more aware of it so that you can and you are able to make a more informed decision when you look at properties for rent and when you look at properties for sale potentially, because it can not only cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars, but it can cost your life.
Absolutely. And just to remind everybody, it can take a long time for it to show, right? So you might get exposure at one point in time. In Jill's case, it's probably 20 or 30 years ago when she was doing renovations. But it didn't come through until a lot later, and by which time it's very difficult to treat. And a couple of final closing points just on this. The industry and government are still arguing it's an old man's disease, it's disappearing, right? No. It is not an old man's disease, right? You know, Jill's relatively young. There are many examples of younger people being impacted by asbestosis and mesothelioma. And they're just wanting to bullshit their way through and not tackle the fundamental issue, which is that one third of properties across Australia have asbestos in them. You can't leave it in situ. It has to be dealt with. It must be dealt with. And if you're thinking of buying a property, renting a property, or doing DIY, think asbestos.
Definitely, and get the professionals in to test it, treat it, and take it away. But look, I guess we'll say a lot more, and we can dedicate a lot more. And as I said, looking forward to the new site that you're going to be putting up, and can't wait to pump it through and have a bit of say with regards to how people can avoid being affected by by these ongoing issues with around construction that the government's just turned a blind eye on, because of the stuff that goes behind in the background. They just don't want to be responsible. They don't want the machine to stop.
Absolutely. Well, and I'll be making more announcements in the new year about what we're planning to do. There'll be some walks, there'll be more communications and all sorts of things. So there's a lot going on. And in fact, Current Affairs coming to interview us tomorrow. They may be able to speak to Jill, depends whether she's conscious or not, but they're going to certainly talk to us and take a few shots because there's another opportunity to put the message out. So expect a bit more media coverage. And, Edwin, I appreciate your support on what we're doing. You know it's important. I know it's important. We're going to continue the message. Jill's legacy is that actually this is not going to go away. We're going to keep talking about it. But we should move on. Otherwise, we're not going to have a chance to go through the wee chat chattering. And actually, there are some warnings there too, aren't there, right?
Major warnings. As I said, 2022 was also going to be the shit show, because it's not just about one aspect of our life, but it's going to influence and impact most of our lives, from construction to general goods appearing in, at the shops. As I've said before, and I've said on this show before, and that is that, I understand that we graze animals, we farm, we grow fruit and veggies, we do all these things, but it's about getting it from the initial stage, from point A to point B, to the supermarkets, and the short supplies, the shortages of packaging. And now we're going to be moving forward into 2022 with what potentially could bring everything to a halt with regards to this whole thing about urea and the additives for the diesel trucks, AdBlue. Now, the WeChat chatter, as of today, I got given an article from mainland China, what the commentators there are saying, and that is for Australia to pretty much, we better brace, although that they've stopped the supply in the shipment of urea to Australia, because they've got their own issues themselves, and they've got their own supply chain issues themselves, but they've stopped it altogether. Now, we know that our stockpile is going to carry us through till February of 2022. But, the government's still on this tongue-ping type of attitude, she'll be right, mate, type of attitude, moving forward from there. Yeah, we'll have this sorted out and everything. Look, the earliest that we could get our own urea into production from the mine in South Australia is 2025, but yet what China is saying is that this issue of urea and AdBlue and all this fertilizer issues and also the transport issues that we're going to face with the with these additives are extracted from urea for the diesel trucks is going to haunt us potentially till for a very long time into 2022. So it's not going to get sorted out in the first quarter. They're saying that this is going to get worse for us, and they particularly single out Australia, and it could it's going to persist and go beyond the first quarter. So let's not get our hopes up that things are going to get resolved, in February, and ScoMo is going to put a rabbit out of the hat and get us back on track, because it's not. So we need to be prepared.
Yeah, and this is part of a global issue, right? So you're right, Australia is being hit, but other countries around the world. So it goes right back to the supply chain disruption and another factor to put in over the top, right? Another reason why economies around the world are going to actually continue to get crushed, and why the so-called recovery may well be a lot weaker than a lot of people are thinking.
Yeah, well, that's right. So that's one of the things that, and it's certainly obviously with regards to what the show is about. It's about property, and this is what we've been saying. We're very careful as to what type of properties that we're looking at and buying. We're sourcing ourselves for our own family and friends, and also for our clients. And our viewers should also be wary of that moving forward. Now, that's from a purchasing point of view, but look at it also from a rental point of view. Look at the property in detail and see whether or not your landlord is going to be able to fix any issues moving forward, because they're just going to be. I mean, most landlords, not all, but most landlords are tight asses as it is anyway, and they're hesitant on getting things fixed, let alone when you've got major issues. So don't just settle for what's there. Sometimes you need to look a little bit further afield in order to get something that's going to be a little bit more comfortable, because I can tell you there's going to be major issues with getting properties rectified, let alone. So you've got this whole trickle down effect from your high rises right down to your homes and your granny flats, Martin. It is going to be an absolute spaghetti moving forward into 22 with how it could the supply chain issues could really affect the property industry. So when you see people going toe to toe with you, all these syndicates and these small-time developers and property flippers, just sit back and have a little chuckle, because chances are that they might not be able to complete their project moving forward. But it's just one of those things with regards to that. The other thing that obviously we need to be careful about is Xi has been pretty much decoupling China from a lot of the Western world and a lot of the the luxuries that the people have experienced over since China opened up to the Western world, and now they're moving back. The next thing is that they're going to be shutting down is going to be Tiger and Futu Brokers, which are two of the largest brokerage firms that are operating overseas. Which basically means that Chinese, the high net worth individuals have been able to buy shares over in, through these brokerage firms, over in America and overseas, and use this as a ways to basically get the money out of China. So Xi is going to be closing that door, pretty much. So the Chinese, mainland Chinese, that are still have most of the wealth internally. Which are the middle class and the upper middle class, are pretty much they see themselves as having on or about 8 to 10 weeks to get their money out into IPOs and out of there, and or liquidating their shares in that are being managed through Tiger and Futu Brokerage, and transferring those share portfolios. In these countries, and basically going into another property frenzy. So come March next year, we're going to see a lot of activity from as these people transfer their asset class from shares to pretty much homes where they feel it's going to be obviously safer, because they don't want to take it back to China because of the issues that the limited issues that they have, the limited investment, positive investment arms that they have there, which, you know, one would say that, that they have none at the moment, and they certainly don't want to put it in property in China, given all the issues with Evergrande and all the other developers that are having catastrophic consequences at the moment.
No, and I assume that then means they're more likely to bring money into specific areas around the country where, you know, property that's, if I can put it, Chinese-friendly is likely to be in significant demand.
Well, that's correct. And this is what we saw and what we shared in our podcast before, where, we were almost going toe-to-toe with these syndicates, and they're already very, very active. My advice to a lot of the people that want to get into the property market, unless you've got really deep pockets and unless you've made a lot of money in crypto and in all shares, and you really want to you really want to chase these, you've got some very, very deep pockets, some syndicates that are bringing in truckloads of money, because they don't want to take it back home, and that's going to be a competition. So look a little bit further afield, look in areas where the Chinese, the foreign Chinese appetite isn't as strong, would be my advice, because there's a lot of dodgy money coming into the country and will be coming in over the next couple of months.
Absolutely. Well, let's just talk briefly about numbers, right? Because the listings numbers are quite interesting, right? They are reasonably strong and they're quite similar to last year now, right?
Well, they were, as you recall, Martin, up to the first week of August, numbers were very, very scarce. The listings on market, even apartments. I started paying a lot of attention as to the number of apartments on market, because they were being they were really, really low, and it's the lowest that I've ever seen it for, since I've been working in the real estate industry in regards to selling and buying, as a real estate agent, and so it was really spooky. It got really spooky. It wasn't until October, really, till the beginning of October, where we saw a surge in numbers, and even the mainstream media picked that up as well, and things sort of slowed down a little bit. There was a delay, obviously, with the spring numbers, because of we were in a lockdown situation with all these issues with the bug. But what we've done now is we're sitting on par. You know, it's almost even Stevens with last year's how we ended up last year. Obviously, we're going to be paying a lot more attention as to what happens now in January. Usually in the second week of January is when numbers start to climb back up again, but we're going to see how quickly these numbers climb back up. Now, some have been reporting, other contributors to the mainstream magazines and publications have been saying that, agents are sitting on, close to 40 properties that they'll come online after Boxing Day of 2022. Well, let's wait and see how true that is. I mean, I hope so. I hope the numbers really start climbing. But I'm sort of also thinking that now that the borders have opened up, Martin, people, the retirees, the people that are wanting to make state change from New South Wales to Queensland, because they can get something bigger and better and buy the water over in Queensland, and literally, retiring, they got no mortgages, they will be putting their homes on the market for sale now. And I've seen a lot of movement in the Shire with regards to these people. And also, interestingly enough, in the last 3 weeks, I've seen a lot of movement with the people that we talk to, the agents that we talk to in the mountains. There's quite a sizable contingency of owner occupiers and also investors that are selling down. And they're also, when I talk to the agents and I ask them, so where they're moving or why they're selling, and they're doing they're going north. Everybody seems to be going north. I know the Melbournians are going north. 47,000 of them or so have already gone north, and there's probably another 147 packing the bags as we speak, Martin.
Absolutely, yes. There's a lot of drift, though. Interestingly, locally here, it's gone much slower. So there's a lot of listings, there's a lot of property for sale, but nobody's actually buying. And in fact, just down the road, There was a series of plots that they've been working on over the last year, finally held the auction last week. They were expecting the plots to go for about $1.4 million apiece. Not one sold. Nobody turned up. It was remarkable. And that's an illustration of the fact that, you know, you can list property, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to actually sell.
No, and look, vendors' expectations obviously are still high. Until the chatter from the real estate agents, the selling agents, filters down through to the vendors, you know, not a lot's going to change. You are going to see the listings that have come on, and there's some listings that have come on in the last 3-4 days, which I say to people is that they're the ones that, if that's the area that you're going to be looking into, they're the ones that you look at, because obviously there's a reason for them to go on market so late in the year and potentially keeping the property on market over the Christmas and New Year's break. So I can see two things. Is one is that they're highly motivated vendors. They want to do a quick change, and some of these people are obviously also going north, and they do want a quick sale because the transactions in Queensland are a lot quicker than what they happen here in New South Wales. The way you buy over in Queensland is a little bit you have to more or less have money in your hand because the settlement periods are a lot shorter now. That's one. And secondly, the other thing that's going around is that we feel that there's going to be a lot more agents working through the this holiday period than there were last year, and in particular, a lot of our contacts in the Asian markets they're going to be working through it because of what's going to obviously they want to make hay whilst the sun shines, and all this chatter that's going on with some of this dodgy money going to be filtering into the Sydney market, they want to be there, but they themselves have off market properties that you don't see, a lot of our people don't, a lot of the general public don't see these, but these are going to be the motivated vendors. They're ones that go public. They're not so motivated. Obviously, going to stay high, try to ride it out. But blocks of land is what I understood you to say down there that we're looking at 1.4. I'd imagine to think that the cost of construction there, if you're going to buy something for 1.4, the cost of construction there, you're not going to get in much change out of $1 million. As well, so in to put $1 million into a build, that's a lot of home. Depending on the topography, of course, that potentially is a lot of home, or may not necessarily be a lot of home. Maybe only half a home, because most of it needs to go into the piering and the footings because of the topography of the landscape down there in your area, Martin.
Yes, there is a lot of slopey grounds, a lot of underground streams, and in fact, quite a few of the properties quite close to where we live have problems with slippiness. And in fact, we've got cracks in a few of the roads around here, so it is a big deal. And one of the things that I had a few people come and ask me about, what's it like living here? And one of the things I said to them was, well, you know, just make sure that you do your homework on going down. You might have to go down a long way. And I was talking to someone the other day who's built quite recently, not just down the street, and he was expecting to do quite, you know, shallow piers, but had to go down, I think, 4.5 or 5 meters to hit rock, right, because it was just nothing. So moral of the story is, until you've got the groundworks done, you've no idea what your costs are going to be.
Well, exactly, and this is moving forward again with the supply chain issues. I would not be looking at a build not in the near future. And even with a renovation, I'd limit myself to what I was prepared to take on. I've got some issues where I'm at the moment with our own place. We're basically if we wanted to get work done in the last 3 weeks, we would have had to pay almost double what we were paying 6 weeks ago. because everybody obviously wants to get things done, and labor costs are going through the roof because their little brothers are, as you and I've shared before, they're going back home. They're going back to China, so that that labor force is really diminished, and so you've got people with proper papers and licenses and everything that are pretty much doing what a laborer would do. So you're paying a fortune. So we're waiting for some of these companies that we work with that we get renovations work done through, or they assist our clients with the renovations. We're waiting for them to basically, the main, what we say, the WALOs or the WALO companies, the white man's companies, if I can say this, basically go on holidays. But these people, because they're on a day-by-day type of a fee structure, they need something done. So we've just been waiting for them to do what they have to do, and for the construction companies that they've been working and operating in, go on their long end-of-year break. So then that way we can then get them to come. Otherwise, it's just too costly even to do some renovations, Martin. So to build something, it's just phenomenal.
Absolutely. And a lot of the estimates are underplayed anyway because, of course, the cost of materials have gone up. So, it's, I think, a very important point to make. If you're thinking of really building, you should make sure you've got sufficient flexibility in your finances to be able to accommodate, a 20 to 25% overrun, right? Because typically at the moment, that's what we're seeing.
Oh, look, make sure you've got an elastic wallet.
Exactly right. Well, talking of elastic wallets, what about underground tunneling, right? There's a very interesting article which suggests perhaps that someone is thinking ahead.
Well, not all is that dodgy money, man. I thought it was an interesting article that was brought up in Sydney Auctions an REA article. Malabar dump next to Long Bay prison sells for $900,000 over the reserve. Look, after reading the article and reading about the colourful personalities that reside in Long Bay Jail, I just had one question to ask on Twitter, and that is, will we need to send Raptor Force, that arm of the New South Wales Police Force, to go and conduct a search of the subfloor area to see if there's any any tunneling going on? And if you sort of see excavators go in and disappear, or drilling machines go in and disappear, I'd be calling the police.
It certainly makes you wonder, doesn't it? You've got the prison next door, and you just go down and through and up and bingo.
Yeah, look, it's I always go, if El Chapo can tunnel his way out of that so-called high security prison that he was in, piece of cake. Just get a couple of Colombians, they'll tell you what to do.
Well, I've seen it all on The Great Escape. I mean, if they can do it there, they can do it anywhere, right?
As long as you've got a motorbike on the other side.
Exactly.
Look, he may be on a winner. This buyer may be on a winner. Things. Who knows? I don't know. I didn't do much research on the actual property, the land size. Just by on face value, what was in the article. But look, at the end of the day, Martin, not all the time, but sometimes it's this out of box type of properties, out of the box scenarios are the ones that could sometimes yield you the most value in the future. And in comparison to everything else, the article alludes to being, the cheapest. I mean, look, you've also got, the jail in the Blacktown LGA. So there's, we seem to not to care about jails anymore, Martin, and what we build around. I mean, look, if you really want to go back and you really want to spook somebody, you say, look, I want to remember the Lucas Heights that changed its name to Barden Ridge, because you've got Lucas Heights, the nuclear plant, and nobody wanted to go to and buy land in that subdivision. Now you can't buy a home there for less than $1.8 million. Yep. I mean, when mates were telling me back back in the day in the 90s, oh, yeah, I bought a block of land in Lucas Heights. I said, shit, man, you're going to have to, do you have a hazmat suit? Do you have to take all sorts of precautions? But, we seem to not to care. We seem to tamper. She'll be right, mate.
Well, I don't know about you, but if I see possums glowing in the dark, then I, get a little bit worried, right?
Hey, my little buggers that live in the shed, there's four of them, their eyes glow in the dark. They scare the shit out of me every time I have to go in there when the wind's blowing. I have to go and, make sure that, the doors are bolted shut and everything. It's pretty scary, man.
I know. Okay, well, let's go on to the second article. Now, this is, of course, classic, right? All those people drifting up to Queensland from other parts of the country, right? And what does Queensland government do?
Look, it sticks it to us. That's it. It's there. It's raising. Queensland government slugs in interstate property investors with new land tax. Oh, good. Shit. They want to have everything. They want to have everything, Martin. They want to, the state of origin. They want to keep that. They want to keep they want to have, at one stage, every single grand final was being played up there. And, these Queenslanders, seriously. But you got to laugh, though. You got to laugh how people have been caught out. And I think the ones that are going to be suffering the most are the ones that, over the years, lost some. I started going to Queensland to look at property to buy. We were buying the properties that, if you recall, the Japanese were buying properties up there, left, right, and center, and everybody was making a fuss about it. So that was in the 90s, and then in the early 2000s, they did their ass, and we were buying them for 50% of the value of what there was that they bought them for in the early 90s. So that was the last time we bought property up there, or the family bought property up there. I know other people, other investors currently, and friends as well that own anywhere between 3 and 5 properties there. So they're going to get smashed. So good luck.
Well, this is interesting. The Queensland government proposal would consider the value of an investor's real estate assets outside of Queensland.
Exactly.
To determine a land tax bill for their local investment, right? So they're putting their arms around the whole country and saying, cha-ching.
And the biggest concern that a lot of these investors should have is that, don't forget, a lot of investors that have bought, eight, 10 years ago, They were buying a house and land, and it's a land tax, Martin. Now, there's not much land component to a high-rise development or apartments. We know there's a lot of those investors as well. But these people are sitting on land. Yep. So it's the land component that gets taxed, and the land component here, also they're going to be assessing the value of that, which has gone through the roof, obviously, in the last couple of years. So they are in for a joyful experience. Now, one of the agents that one of our followers that I've been chatting to is trying to buy over in Queensland. One of the agents has told him, as he's looking in a particular part of Queensland, just a bit further north from Brisbane, and that is that she's of the opinion, and she's a very apparently in this town, she's really well known, and she's been there for decades, and she's been telling him that they can't. It's gobsmacking the prices that people are paying, but she's of the opinion that come Easter, you could see a huge retreat in values as well as people do their ass. And this is only just going to add to that, to that pain. Now, I know a lot of the WeChat chatterers that we shared over a month ago that were buying sight unseen over, up to $850,000 in particular towns that we shared. So they're going to be spitting chips as well. But look, as I say, good luck.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, Edwin. Singapore slugs overseas property investors 30% stamp duty, right? Well, obviously, Queensland's going in the same direction.
Yeah, well, it's not as bad then, is it? Look, you can understand why Singapore have done this or is doing this, apart from every other tax that they charge you when you're there. And because they do have an issue with land. But I don't think Queensland has an issue with land, because when we used to go up there to look at property, look at subdivisions, when we were doing a bit of canvassing or talking to developers to flog their subdivisions, their investment properties here, and this is about 15 years ago. I didn't see that they were running out of land, Martin, and it was subdivision after subdivision after subdivision. One of the things that a lot of people don't understand about Queensland is that the rental population is very transitory. Now, the people that are going up to Queensland to buy in Queensland, the retirees, they're buying to live. They're buying, as a principal place of residence, and this is perhaps why this agent that was talking to one of our followers is saying that she can see that things are going to turn around come Easter with a lot of people that are really overpaying. And perhaps one of the things is what we saw, as I said, about 15 years ago, and sort of kept tabs on things. Like, we didn't do much after that, but we still kept tabs on a lot of the subdivisions. You go up there and it's just subdivision after subdivision, and the rental population is very, very transitory. So you may be getting $500 a week in your brand new home, out in Red Plains or Ipswich or wherever today, but come 12 months' time, when the next subdivision is opened up and is completed, you'd be lucky to get $420, because people there say, well, why would I want to live in an old home when I can go and live in a new home and only pay $480? That this sort of stuff goes on there. And look, it's going to be a learning curve for a lot of people, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you're making a wonderful point there about, when you buy a new property, it's new, but as soon as you've moved into it, it's no longer new, right? But down the road, there's still being new stuff. And so what happens is that the value of that new property, just like when you drive a new car out of the, garage the first time, it drops. And quite often people have been quite shocked to see just how much they lose after that first initial, whoopee, it's new, because it's no longer new. It's a very important point.
Yeah, it's, and I guess in Queensland we've been, friends, myself and my family, we've been very, very careful and very cautious as to what you buy, because, as I said, there's a lot more going on there in subdivisions than what I've seen in New South Wales, and we live here. And it's just, it has been an eye-opener, I don't think things will change.
No, and as I keep saying, do your research, just don't take high-level data, get granular, understand what's going on locally, because there are some really weird things going on. And talking about weird things, migration is the answer, Edwin. Migration is the answer.
That's it. We need to bring in the slave labor, man. We need to bring them in. Calls for migration boosts to bolster the workforce. Obviously, the calls are from the from different industries. I could understand that there's a lot of businesses that are suffering, because we've known that a lot of these low income positions that the locals don't want to necessarily take up have been taken up by the ghost migrants or ghost visa holders or whatever you want to call them, the people that just overstay the tourist visa or overstay the student visa or whatever. So look, in that, let me reiterate and let me say is that the unfortunate thing is, which a lot of people don't know and haven't still come to terms with, is that the federal government has laxed a lot of the migration regulations or criteria to come into Australia, where to the point, and I'll leave you with this one on the, with this point on this story, and that is where the medical profession is perhaps the easiest pathways to obtain a permanent residency here in Australia. Now, the medical profession is not necessarily as what you and I would determine as to a medical professional to be. I mean, this has now encompasses acupuncturists and massagists, and you know, and a bit further down the track, maybe we're gonna. It's also gonna you know encompass masseurs with a happy ending. Who knows, Martin? You know, I'm just putting it out there, but it's so broad, and you know, and regional. Regional New South Wales, I mean, from the state of New South Wales, from my sources, it's regional New South Wales. Now, Newcastle and Wollongong are also captured under the term of regional New South Wales. So obviously that gives you more brownie points if you come into, you know, migrate to Australia and you want to live in New South Wales. And if you want to live in regional New South Wales, you get more brownie points than what. But to also engulf Wollongong and Newcastle, yeah, it tells you, it shows you what the governments are really trying to do, make it an easier pathway all around for more people to come into the country. And is that really the answer, or is the answer to lift the wage, you know, the low income thresholds, lift them up so that the local people can take on those positions and can make use of those rather than having them sit out, on you know, government-assisted incomes, because you know, why go and work? Yeah, I mean, all sorts of arguments, all sorts of things conjure up with this, Martin. But I don't know. What do you think is the answer?
Well, it's two observations. The first observation is businesses want cheap labour, and they are not prepared to pay standard wages for Australians to do a lot of jobs. Right? They want people to come in cheap and pick, you know, fruit or whatever. Right? So. Encouraging more migration is a way of pulling in cheap international labour, right? Now, some of those people who come in may possibly be able to buy property, although I'm suspecting that not a lot of them will, right? But it is absolutely a downward force on wages growth. And it's interesting that Phil Lowe, a few months ago in one of his speeches, made the point that, in fact, wages growth will be stronger with lower migration. Right. So in other words, what these business communities are saying is bring in more people so we don't have to pay them as much, and that will keep wages down. So it's a wages story rather than anything else. And I actually think we need to really challenge this. My own view is we don't need a lot more migrants coming in. What we do need is proper jobs with proper pay. That's the real answer, but that's not one that many businesses would be prepared to countenance.
No, of course not. And it's not, it's something that, again, the you know, all forms of government have dropped the ball on for over a decade.
Common theme, once again, governments just dropping the ball and saying, oh, it's not really a problem, when we know it is. You know, unfortunately, we see a lot of that in Australia, both at the federal and the state level. And I think the migration question, and, you know, if you talk to a lot of property developers, they're screaming out for more people. Bring me more people so that they can buy these high-rise things that I've already built, right? Well, that's another example of cart and horse in the wrong order, right? But there you go.
Yeah, but this is the whole thing, and this is the whole, how they're looking at it, and what really happens in the real world. This people that the increase in the migration that they're trying to bring in, obviously it's to you know, to cater and look at for the low income positions. Yep. and to keep wages down. These people are going to be mainly renting. Anyway, that's on one side of the coin. On the other side of the coin is what you and I have been talking about as well, and it's important to keep an eye on, is the high net worth individuals, the professionals in the three main sectors, IT, medical, and finance, that have already been granted permanent residency visas, that have already been granted and just waiting to come in. Now, we see that through our contacts, in the migration through our migration lawyer contacts, as well as the you know the different people that are involved in assisting these individuals to come into the country, and obviously we get to know them and we get to know about them and what goes on, because obviously we get called in to see how we can assist them in either getting a property to buy or a property to rent temporarily in order to for them to have somewhere somewhere to live. And this is why we go back to the numbers in terms of freestanding homes, Martin, in areas that are basically have got high appetite with Asian communities, that there's a high appetite. We've got to keep a close eye on those areas, because if those numbers don't pick up and if they wane like they waned this year, going into the first quarter and then the second and third quarter, they really dropped in numbers. Obviously, that's when there's an uptick in property prices, because these individuals that are coming in with deep pockets. And unfortunately, it puts a lot of the local, particularly first-time buyers, really, they shouldn't be called first-time buyers anymore for these areas. Because they can't even afford a shack in some cases, and this is this whole thing that I keep on saying, where the governments have really dropped the ball, because they haven't really looked at how to first of all decentralize and push the infrastructure further out in order for younger families that are looking to for a proper accommodation, good accommodation, a good lifestyles, and be able to sustain a small family. I mean, the governments were just so punch drunk on stamp duty. The state governments were just so punch drunk on stamp duty. The local governments were so punch drunk on the council contributions for these high rise developments. It became the easiest, the quickest, the cheapest, and the best way to get those those taxes in the coffers with for the local young people, local families, and the local people that just wanted to get in the market, whether you be young or middle aged, wanted to get into the market and try to save every penny to get in the market, and just got priced out. Again, it's just one of these things that the governments of both persuasions have just literally dropped the ball. I don't know how to put it any other way.
No, I agree. It's certainly a big issue. And finally, just as we come to the end of this very long show, your tip for the week, and probably tip for the year, actually.
Moving forward, with the tip, what we've been asked of late, and more and more, and obviously we have raised the some of these concerns in the past with how incomes have become tighter, as we've had these issues with the bug, moving forward with the supply chain issues and everything. Obviously, it's not just happening to us, it's happening around the world. And big concerns, or one of the highest points of high emphasis that in the mandates that we get given, is to look for properties, particularly with people that are looking at engaging us from overseas, that they're looking for homes with high security. But it makes sense moving forward as to what's going to happen. And I believe Tony LeCantro brought this up a few years ago on one of the shows, when he was talking about issues moving forward and how society has changed over the years and over the decades because of his work that he used to do originally as as an officer in the police force, and what he saw and how the demographics change and how the people's changed. And again, I'm seeing this again, and I can see the crime rate in certain areas picking up. When there's greater need, people have got greater need, obviously the crime rate picks up. We see a lot of these little brothers and little sisters that have been working illegally in the hospitality industry and also in the building industry, of it, particularly in this year, where they're now being caught up picked up by the police because they've been attending to hydroponics in homes. So there's a surge, there's an increase in crime. So what people are looking for is security. And this is my tip: look for security. Start looking more closely at the level of security around your home, whether it be a rental property, whether it be your own home. Be careful in the basement areas of in the high-rise developments in car parks. Just because there's a gate at the front door doesn't mean that people won't follow aren't following you behind when you're driving down into the so-called secure basement parking areas. So just be a little bit more cautious as we see that when there are more people in need. Obviously, these areas are areas of concern. So yeah, security is my tip for the week, for our last show for the year, Martin. Stay vigilant and look at securing your principal place of residence, your rental, and just being vigilant in general.
Yeah, that's good advice. And as with all of these things, it's sometimes people can be a bit blasé about this stuff, but it is actually quite important, and particularly now. And interesting you say it's the last show of the year, so you're not going to do one next Monday?
Oh, I thought, well, I'm thinking, I was counting in my head 7 days, but I'm thinking it was the 22nd. So when is Monday? But that is
What?
Monday.
Well, it's the 20th today.
Oh, shit.
So I would have thought that the 27th would be next Monday, which
No,
would be
we're
our
in. I'm in. Yeah,
you're
I'm
in?
in.
Okay, that's
Yeah.
just checking. I mean,
Yeah.
if you want a Monday off, that's fine, but I'll be
No,
here.
I'm in. I'm in. I'll even try and get see if I can get Evan and Dusty in their elves uniform
Yeah, well, I
for
think
questions before the
we should do an end of year special. So end of year special next Monday. And interestingly, I've got Tony LeCantro coming on in a couple of weeks to do an end of year special, sort of New Year special as well. So he'll be on soon as well. So there you go. We'll be able to pick up some of those thematics. Edwin, as always, very important conversations, very important messages. Thanks for your time. And we will see you after Christmas. So have a good Christmas. But it
Likewise.
is not the end of the year yet. You've still got to do one more show.
Yeah, and let's go off with a bang.
See you later. Take care. Bye-bye.
All the best, man. Bye.
Bye.